Big thanks to the organizers for creating this nice meeting. Thanks for having me here. I would, as the title says, like to give a talk today about something related to the diffeomorphism invariant Hilbert space of loop quantum gravity, precisely the spatially diffeomorphism invariant states. And it'll be a bit technical. So on the other hand, it's also pretty, I find. So I hope I can keep your attention awake. So very briefly, remember that in loop quantum gravity, the spatially diffeomorphism invariant states form a Hilbert space. At the same time, there are elements of the dual of the kinematical Hilbert space. And there is a basis in this Hilbert space, this diffeomorphism invariant Hilbert space. And elements of this basis are labeled, among other things, by, roughly speaking, by diffeomorphism equivalence classes of graphs. And those elements of the basis are these S-knots that we have heard already in Thomas Thiemann's and Carlo Rovelli's talk. These states are very important because, well, I mean, among other things, they are, they form they are the states on which the Hamiltonian constraint acts. So they're the home for the Hamiltonian constraint, arguably a very important operator in loop quantum gravity. On the other hand, presumably the physical states are among those, because, I mean, a physical state should, among other things, be diffeomorphism invariant. But I would like to argue that we don't really understand them very well. We don't really understand what they mean. Let me just be very provocative and say, you know, I draw some, you know, diffeomorphism invariance classes of graphs here, and I imagine that they carry labels and so on. And I ask you, does any of those represent like a homogeneous isotropic universe? And I think, well, I mean, one can say some stuff about this, but one can certainly not answer this kind of question in all generality, because what one needs is operators to probe the physical content of these states. And we have some operators, for example, the total volume of the spatial slice, which is a diffeomorphism invariant quantity, well defined on this Hilbert space. Another one is the Hamiltonian constraint with constant lapse. And there are arguably some other operators, but certainly we don't know many. And those we know, especially the Hamiltonian constraint and friends, are very, very complicated, and we even don't know whether we quantize them correctly. So that's one thing. Another thing is that the structure of this diffeomorphism invariant Hilbert space, so it's very complicated because, as I told you, states labeled by diffeomorphism invariance classes of graphs, so we have knotting, and not even mathematicians know how to describe this nicely, explicitly. And there are also other things. There are additional labels, and there are subtleties, like certain combinations of linear combinations of these states that you would expect to be there actually have zero norm, and so on and so forth. So the idea that I want to present in this talk is that we start to investigate, A, the structure of the diffeomorphism invariant states, and B, quantization on the diffeomorphism invariant states in a toy model. And I will look at the toy model of a quantum scalar field in a loop quantum gravity-like representation, and I will be more precise about what I mean by this. And in particular, we will look at the spatially diffeomorphism invariant states of this field and try to quantize operators on that space. So what are we going to do? The starting point is to work with a scalar field that is in the variables that are analogous to what we are used to in loop quantum gravity. Namely, the field itself, we don't take it itself as a variable on the quantum level, but we take its exponential as some well-defined quantity that should correspond to an operator on the quantum side. And the momentum, on the other hand, is a density, so we should, or we can integrate it to get some scalar quantity, and that's the other type of quantity we want to quantize. And now this number here, this lambda in the exponential, I will take it to be either real or integer. And in the real case, you can really think of quantizing a scalar field. In the integer case, it would be more like quantizing a U1 sigma model, a U1 valued field, rather than a scalar field, because you can't even classically reconstruct the scalar field in that case. So the first exercise that I want to walk you through is to characterize the diffeomorphism invariant states for this model explicitly. The second exercise I want to do is I want to try and quantize diffeomorphism invariant quantities, call them L alpha. Alpha is again an index in this index set. And I've chosen this kind of variable to try, this kind of quantity to try, because A, it's obviously spatially diffeomorphism invariant. B, it seems kind of simple because pi is something we know how to quantize, and this exponential is something we know how to quantize, so we have a fighting chance to work this out. And C, and most importantly, those quantities have a closed Poisson, form a closed algebra under Poisson brackets, and that means we can check our quantization, because we want, not only do we want to write down some operator, we want to check the commutation relations, and we want to check adjointness relations. I should say that, I mean, you guys probably see these relations and you say, oh, that's the lit algebra. And indeed, at least in the integer case, you can view these guys as generating diffeomorphisms, but not spatial diffeomorphisms. Remember, these are diffeomorphism invariant quantities. Rather, what they generate in the integer case, in the sigma model case, is sort of diffeomorphisms in the target U1. And in the R case, it's, if you like, diffeomorphisms of the Bohr compactification, but that's not a very well-defined thing. So let me remind you of what I mean by loop quantum gravity-like representation. So we take the spatial slice sigma. We take functions on this spatial slice into the index set. Let me call these let me call elements of this index set, let me call them charges. It's not physical, but just as a matter of talking. So functions of from sigma into the charges that are non-zero only at finitely many points. And these finitely many points, that's sort of the graph that you have for loop quantum gravity. You have edges. Here, you just have points. So my notation is that if I evaluate such a function, I just put an index. If I evaluate it at x, I just put an index x. Let's take the formal span of these objects. So they define a linear space, and there is an inner product on them, and you can close this space, and you get the kinematical Hilbert space. And you can see that the notation is a little funny, but this is just the normal thing that is done in various places in the literature. Now, the representation of these basic variables is that the exponential of the field just acts by adding a charge, and the momentum is so these basis states are eigenstates for this operator, so it acts by multiplication. And that's precisely analogous to what one does in the full theory. And one should say that the spatial diffeomorphisms are unitarily implemented in this theory, in this representation. Now, the diffeomorphism invariant states are defined in the full theory by group averaging. So they're linear forms over the cylindrical functions, and they're given a scalar product. And this scalar product and the action on cylindrical functions is obtained by group averaging. The idea is you define the evaluation of a group averaged state on some cylindrical state by literally taking the kinematical scalar product, but then averaging it over the diffeomorphism group and dividing by the volume of the diffeomorphism group. And, you Obviously, there are issues with convergence here, but one has a fighting chance to get this right because this kinematical scalar product is very singular. As soon as you, so the states in the, well, this scalar product will be zero for many, almost everywhere. So one has a chance to define this integral still. There are issues with infinities cropping up, and so one has to give a more precise formulation of what one does, and this one formulation of this has been around for quite a long time. And in that formulation, actually, the integral is expressed as a sum over diffeomorphisms, but not just over all, but over, it's split in two, if you like. And one sum is over, so first of all, this is defined graph by graph. The kinematical states are, you can break the kinematical Hilbert space up in states, in spaces orthogonal to each other, which are labeled by graphs in the full theory. And the first sum is over diffeomorphisms, which leave the graph invariant, but potentially move stuff around away from the graph. And then there is a second sum, and that's over the so-called graph symmetries of the graph, and that would be diffeomorphisms which sort of move, I mean, equivalence classes actually of diffeomorphisms, which amount to permuting the edges of a graph. And there is a normalization factor here, and the usual choice is to just divide by the size of the graph symmetries, but for that is very natural for the full theory, but not so natural for the scalar field. And so for the moment, let me choose this equal to 1, and I'll come back to that. So finally, there's a scalar product given by this group averaging, as I've written down here. So now let's come back to the first exercise. Now, not full theory, but just a scalar field. Want to characterize these diffeomorphism invariant states explicitly. Here, I've given you a formula, but that's not very enlightening. So what are they really labeled by? And, well, in some ways, you would have to do a case-by-case analysis because it depends a little on the dimension, on the group of diffeomorphisms and so on. So one simple way of getting rid of that is to make an assumption. And this assumption, in my case, will be that the diffeomorphisms are, the diffeomorphism group is large enough so that it can map any two sets of points into one another and also permute any set of points among each other. And this can be shown to be satisfied, for example, for connected spatial slice and smooth diffeomorphisms and dimension larger than one. On the other hand, it's obviously not satisfied, for example, for in one dimension, for example, for the circle. And I'll come back to that case later. Now, what is important to note is that from this assumption, it follows that the sort of the diffeomorphism invariant content of the states can be very simply contained in these numbers of charges function. Let me give you an example. So you have a state lambda, and let's say it has these edges or these vertices here, and the charge is -1, -1, -3, -7. And all you have to remember after group averaging is that you had twice -1, 1, 3, 1, 7, and everything else 0. So you get this function from the charges into the positive integers, and that's all you have to remember. Now, you can build a Hilbert space out of these guys. So you take these the functions from the charges, not the zero charge, all other charges, into the natural numbers that are non-zero only in finitely many places. You take the linear span of these. You define an inner product on this. And then you find out that actually you can make these. These are just abstract vectors, but you can make them be in the dual of the cylindrical functions by using this inner product and this, this number function that you can associate to a state like this, like I've shown you in the previous slide. Furthermore, group averaging of state lambda is just this element in this Hilbert space that you get. And finally, the scalar product is just this one here. So the nice thing about this is that you actually have a Fox structure on this. And it should not be h-kin, it should be h-diff, certainly. You have a Fox structure on this diffeomorphism, on these diffeomorphism invariant states. Namely, you can define a number operator to a given charge, you can define a total number operator, you can define annihilation and creation operators, and they do all the things that you expect from them. I should point out that these guys are certainly not Fourier coefficients. That's not the interpretation. Fourier coefficients of the field. I mean, one thing is that the labels are in the charges and not in something else. Another thing that I should note is that these operations in the loop quantum gravity lingo are graph changing because they create and remove edges. Now, a very brief aside, because I think I'm running out of time. The S1 case can be dealt with in similar manner. Only thing is you can't permute the labels. You can only shift them on a circle. And so what happens is that you can still define annihilation and creation operators, but their algebra is deformed. You have most of the time you have the normal relations, but there is sort of a term that you don't expect, which is just an operation replacing charge alpha with charge alpha prime. Now, that much is already very nice. We could characterize the diffeomorphism invariant Hilbert space very explicitly, and it has a very nice and simple structure. Now, can we use this to do quantum theory on this space? Remember, we wanted to quantize these objects, and let's first start on the kinematical Hilbert space, and let's try to see whether they make sense as operators there. Now, you see the biggest problem in these is that you have an ordering problem. You have momentum and field multiplied together, and so you will have to do something, and you, by playing around, the simplest thing to do is first move the momentum to the right, and then you get an operator, very natural from the actions that you already know, and I've written its action here, and you compute the computation relations, and they work out fine. What you also note is that these guys are graph changing, and then you're already a little worried because there are some old results about graph changing operators on the kinematical Hilbert space. They're usually pathological, and that's true here too. So, sorry, it should be not an L here, but an S here. These operators here have no densely defined adjoints, so they're quite sick. In particular, we have implemented the commutation relations, but not the adjointness relations. So let's go to the diffeomorphism invariant Hilbert space, and let's see what we can do there under the assumption, not the S1 case, the assumption that we made before. Because, so we can start by saying that these kinematical operators that we had have a dual action on the diffeomorphism invariant states. So how does this look like? And you can see it can be very explicitly written in terms of annihilation and creation operators. These satisfy the adjointness relations because their duals on the kinematical Hilbert space did. However, and the good thing is also they do have adjoints. So things are much better here already, but the adjoints are not yet what we want. We have the thing that we do want, but we have an additional term. So that's expected because we had started with this funny ordering, so let's get rid of it and use symmetric ordering to define our final operators. They look like this. They satisfy the adjointness relations by definition. However, now you can calculate that apart from the term that you want, there is some additional term. So the algebra of these guys gets extended over what we expected. And now you can, this is not really physical, so it's hard to argue whether that's a terrible thing or not, but certainly this is not a central extension, and so these would be new kind of degrees of freedom that turn up on the quantum level. So let's try to get rid of them. And one thing you can do is you can revisit the choice of these graph symmetries in the choice of this normalization factor in the definition of the inner product. And that comes in because you took adjoints to do this symmetric ordering. And what you find is you get this sort of anomaly really depends on this function f in a rather complicated way. And also in the case if when you're on the circle, you in addition to this anomaly, you get another term. Now, can you try and make this go away? Well, you want to solve things such that this function is zero. And the problem is that generically, if you can solve this explicitly, and it leads to indefinite inner products, because remember the g is, you solve g equal to zero, that gives you an f, and if the f is indefinite, then you get an indefinite inner product. However, there's one sort of limiting case where you're just non-negative, but you're also degenerate, and so you have in that case, a scalar product which is degenerate, so the kinematic, the diffeomorphism invariant Hilbert space is much smaller than you would think, but still infinitely dimensional. This corresponds to, because you have this n naught sitting in there, so that is actually, that corresponds to the case where sigma is not really a manifold, but just a finite set of points, discrete set of points. And if you think about it a little bit, maybe that's actually a nice case, because that means we can build a non-anomalous representation of these things on the diffeomorphism invariant Hilbert space for scalar fields and gravity if we constrain the scalar fields to sit on the gravity vertices. Remember that was in Thomas Thiemann's talk that we don't expect the matter degrees of freedom to be independent of the gravitational degrees of freedom, but sit on the vertices of the graphs of the gravitational excitations. So we can't make this go away. We can't make this go away in general, but we can make it go away at least in this case. And that brings me to my conclusions. We have in this toy model written down the diffeomorphism invariant Hilbert space as a Fock space, so a very simple structure. We discussed this ordering problem for these quantities. I was very happy about the algebraic nature of this because it was really down to doing a calculation and either it comes out right or it comes out wrong, and that was very nice. We discovered that the diffeomorphism invariant Hilbert space somehow tames graph-changing operations, so they can be defined very nicely on there and in a systematic way. And we can solve the quantization problem that we started with, at least in the discrete case, as I described when we couple gravity. I don't know what this means physically, but at least that's the mathematical result. Now, there is something to do. You can try to do something analogous for the more complicated case of gauge theory, where you could also try to start with simple operations, adding loops, say, to your states and see what algebra you get, sort of building up complicated operators from simple ones. And I think that's something one should definitely try to do. Another thing is there seems to be, at least in the S1 case, there seems to be some connection to vertex operators for the bosonic string with these kind of quantities that we have quantized, and that should be explored more. Sorry that I took a little longer. Thank you very much.
Is there an analog of the last linear scale for this correlation of scalar field?
Oh, for the scalar field, yes, there is. This has been analyzed very nicely by Jurek Lewandowski and his students. And there is, you have to define the algebra very carefully, and you can then work it out completely. And it's a little bit richer than actually in the gauge theory case. So you have more, genuinely more representations, but they can be classified very elegantly. And so I can just point you to the paper. And here, certainly, I just use the standard one, none of the non-standard ones.
This is the only thing you want to see, right?
No, they all are. So one could play the same game for the other ones. One could see what one gets.